Unreliable socioeconomic and political practices have jeopardized our society. In the face of these affairs, which have kept our society at the brink of collapse, information remains the deal breaker. Foundation Radio, in its strive to remain the voice of the voiceless, has embarked on the incisive investigative reporting and analysis to reshape our society and give it a moral face. Join our reporters in the news magazine program News Extra, a one-hour news production intended to uncover striking societal concerns and demystify them. Get the deepest understanding about your economic, political, and sociocultural issues in News Extra. News Extra on Foundation Radio every Saturday from 7 to 8:30 a.m.
Foundation Radio. Our society has been wrecked by economic improprieties, political maneuvers, moral decadence, and debasing sociocultural practices. In the face of these vices, which have kept our society at the brink of collapse, constructive information remains the deal breaker. Join our formidable team of reporters on News Extra with incisive investigative reporting and analysis tailored to reshape our society and give it a moral face. News Extra is a production of the news service of Foundation Radio that uncovers striking societal concerns and demystifies them. Get the deepest understanding about economic, political, and sociocultural issues in News Extra. News Extra, your window to constructive criticism.
Foundation Radio.
You are tuned to FM 100 and the radio you are capturing is Foundation Radio, and the program you shall be listening to in the next 1 hour or so is News Extra. As the program's appellation seems to imply, News Extra goes beyond the ordinary news to bring you interviews, commentaries, and analysis. In today's edition, Lanze Vela, Christopher Fogwe, Atanga Tanashaw's Lem Sandra Formujang, and our special correspondent Francis Nguaniba have put together another package for your listening pleasure. In any case, all this may come to naught without the technical expertise of Tendong Julius and Bayeri Waters. For presentation, I am Mokun Johnny Nelson. A series of decisions taken by President Paul Biya since his return from a private stay in an undisclosed country in Europe have caused many a Cameroonian to develop rabbit ears. First, he spared all three Anglophone rectors at the head of state universities, Professor Tafa Edukat of the University of Bamenda, Nalova Leonga of Boya, and Ako Edward of the far-off University of Marwa. And then, at a time least expected, he ruled that henceforth government delegates, mayors, and their deputies shall start receiving salaries. After this series, speculations now abound that more surprises are in the making in the days ahead, top of which may be the long-awaited cabinet reshuffle. In any case, a cross-section of Cameroonians may have lost faith in top appointments in this country. For as long as the 33 years that Mr. Biya has been in power, it has been a recycling of John, Peter and Paul from one position to the other, to the detriment of more energetic, youthful experience. Why, for example, would somebody who held a post in 1982 be appointed to the same position 30 years after? Only in Cameroon would such a thing happen. We may not agree with some opinion that President Paul Biya's decisions are always wise and in the supreme interest of the nation. No matter his good intentions, he is infallible anyway, and there are misjudgments in any human endeavors. And given the circumstances and or recent happenings, an unending war against corrupt top public officials, an increasingly complicated fight against the terrorist Boko Haram, a mutiny by a section of the army, Mr. Biya may just be under pressure. With such pressure, any appointments and decisions may not be rational. Such distribution of jobs may just be a means for him to maintain support for himself and party. Should that be the case, favoritism, cronyism, and nepotism that has been a complaint against this regime for many years will continue to be part of our governance. This would not be good omen, because the appearance of favoritism, cronyism, and nepotism weakens morale in government service, not to mention public faith in the integrity of government. This is News Extra on Foundation Radio. We don't create news. We may analyze and comment on news happenings. Lanza Vela was there to monitor events unfold during the week and now presents News Extra's Week in Retrospect.
The week began on a sad note in the region as a fatal accident around the Texaco filling station in Tarikon Bamenda led to one death. This happened after a motorbike made a head-on collision with a Carina E vehicle headed for Widiko Market. The bike rider died on the spot, while the Carina E driver survived without major injuries. About 400 people in Baba 1 in Babesi subdivision lost their food crops and other valuable property to a flood disaster. The floods were caused by heavy rains on Sunday night, breaking Monday. The victims subsequently received material support from the Babesi Council authorities, while the SDF Ongoke Tunjia Division, Valerine Nobenkwela, created a crisis commission to evaluate the damage caused. This at a time when the Women Democracy Network Cameroon, WDNC, organized a three-day training workshop on increasing female participation in the decentralization process in Cameroon. The workshop that held at the Faith Building at Chair Street in Tarikon brought together female counselors, journalists, and female leaders of civil society organizations from some six regions of Cameroon. Nationally, an international conference on the importance of the usage of a maternal and infant manual guide held at the Yaounde Conference Center. While presiding at the opening ceremony, Public Health Minister Andre Mamafuda highlighted the need for a handbook that will curb maternal and infant mortality in Africa. A presidential decree signed within the week authorized a general population and housing census to go underway in Cameroon on a date yet to be announced, while another presidential decree instituted monthly salaries for government delegates to city councils, mayors, councillors, and their deputies. The decree also spelled out clearly other allowances to be enjoyed by the above personalities. Still within the week, Communication Minister and Government Spokesperson Issa Chiruma Bakari said Amnesty International had published exaggerated and, in some cases, unfounded accusations against the Cameroon military fighting the Boko Haram up north. The minister was speaking to journalists in a press conference while reacting to a release by Amnesty International revealing that Cameroon's defense forces was violating the rights of the Boko Haram militants. Meantime, justice officials in Cameroon were urged to seek urgent solutions towards reducing overcrowding in our prisons. Opening a two-day meeting of justice officials in Yaoundé Thursday, Justice Minister Loi Esso said the issue was a source of worry both to prison administrators and government. And out of the country, Japan's upper house was set to hold the final vote on bills to expand the role of the country's military abroad. The changes will allow Japanese troops to fight overseas for the first time since World War II. Human Rights Watch said the Gambia was ruled by a climate of fear. According to the report, critics of ruler Yahya Jammeh were targets of routine abuses, and Croatia closed 7 of its 8 road border crossings with Serbia following a huge influx of migrants. Officials in Zagreb said they had no choice after more than 10,000 people entered the country a day after Hungary fenced off its border with Serbia. And in sports, Christopher Kaba was voted new president of the Northwest FECAFOOT Regional Bureau. Mr. Kaba, who ran unopposed, won 17 out of the 31 votes in the elections, and the Secretary General of the World Football Governing Body, FIFA, Jerome Valcke, was dismissed. A FIFA release on Thursday stated that Jerome Valcke had been identified with a series of corruption scandals within the organization. Those were some of the major stories that made news within the week. Back to you.
Thank you very much, Lanza Vela. We are 2 weeks into the 2015-2016 academic year, and though this year's back-to-school atmosphere is characterized by heightened security concerns, especially in our school milieu, Christopher Fogwe believes that there is a need, even in this time of war, to invest some of the disproportionately high financial allocations for military hardware on educational facilities.
Emergence by the year 2035 continues to be the cardinal objective to which Cameroonians are expected to aspire towards attaining. It is commonly assumed that the emergence is only attainable in an atmosphere of peace and security. In the mindset of Cameroonian authorities, the armed forces and the police are the main guarantors of peace and security. Social justice and equal opportunity are hardly ever factored into their consideration of peace and security. And that explains why, when it comes to yearly budgetary allocations, those for defense and security are largely out of proportion to what is allocated to ministries catering for more tangible needs of our communities, such as health, education, and social affairs. Every year on the 20th of May, the formidable military hardware and swashbuckling troops that parade powerfully down 20th May Avenue before their commander-in-chief and the power brokers of the country, along with the diplomats, are incontestable testimony to how much the regime is willing to spend on its arsenal of military gadgetry, even in times of peace. Of late, though, Cameroonians have found themselves wondering how effective such a phalanx of military elements are in a war fought against shrouded clandestine 10-year-old girls strapped with powerful suicide bombs. One wonders what kind of a school was available to the type of girl who engages in committing this suicide mission during this 2015 to 2016 back-to-school year. There is clearly a great need for schools and educational facilities across the nation than obtains right now. During this first week of the new school year, we have already seen on our TV screens classrooms of more than 120 tightly seated pupils, with more still clamoring for admission and to be taught by just one teacher. How relevant a scenario of this sort is for attaining any sort of emergence is anybody's guess. On the other extreme are the sparsely distributed rural schools created for political rather than educational reasons, for communities which can neither construct the structures or provide for the desks and teachers for those schools. Once again, we've also witnessed the reopening of some of the so-called professional schools, pretending to impact professional skills without the necessary workshops, laboratories, and competent staff for the so-called professional schools. There is crying need in Cameroon for more schools, more teachers, and far more budgetary allocations to bring about the paradigm shift necessary to put education and technical know-how on the driving seat of Cameroon's drive towards emergence. Investing more in quality education across the entire nation will go a long way to provide the minimum level of transformation to create a climate of social justice that guarantees more sustainable peace than can be obtained from pumping billions into preparing for conventional war, which Boko Haram has proved to be inadequate in the face of the wiles of guerrilla warfare.
Yes, that decrees educate a people and emergence will come naturally and not by the magic of utopic targets like 2035. A three-day seminar to raise the awareness of female councillors on the decentralization process in Cameroon held in Bamenda last week. The participants from six regions were drilled on a number of focal points, including leadership and community mobilization. Lem Sandra Fomujang has this report.
The Women Democracy Network Cameroon Country Chapter is an initiative organized for women and funded by the Women Democracy Network USA. It was a three-day seminar that ran from the 16th to the 18th of September 2015 with theme Increasing Women Citizens' Participation in the Decentralization Process in Cameroon. The proposal of the United Nations Democracy Forum was also acknowledged to carry on this process, and it targeted the training of female councillors, journalists, and civil society organization leaders within six regions and 18 councils of the country. Being an academic seminar, a lot of scrutinizing was done to pick out qualified women who were capable of disseminating information and persuade other women to be part of the decentralization process. The seminar dealt with aspects of decentralization, social accountability, community mobilization, and leadership. Given that this seminar targeted the women, the founder and executive director of the Women Democracy Network Cameroon chapter, Madame Amstella Fomumbot, made the following remarks pertaining to female participation in the decentralization process.
It has been very low. Before we even carry out this project, we went to the field within the 18 councils. We carried out a baseline survey on citizens' participation in the decentralization processes. And the findings reveal that women's participation is absolutely low, at about 15%. So you see, there is an absolute need for us to embark on women strengthen them, encourage them, and support them to get back to their communities and massively mobilize, educate, and create awareness among the women folk to participate. Remember, women are almost 57% of the aggregate population of Cameroon. This implies that if there is any development process going on without the active involvement of women, it means that 57% of the population is being sidelined. On our third day of training, I want to say that I'm satisfied by the level of seriousness put in by the participants. I just believe that they will go back and do work on the field.
With the presence of personalities like mayors, journalists, and civil society leaders, they had various roles to play in ensuring that this seminar was not just a waste of time.
Yes, Lem Sandra Fomujan, we hope that these women will not carry their lessons and bury them in their kitchen pots. In any case, they form the majority and the ball is in their court. Artisanal handicraft is very popular in various parts of the northwest region of Cameroon. The artists involved produce all kinds of decorative objects from drums to statuettes and much more. Though the biggest buyers are usually foreign tourists, most craftsmen and women still make very little from their handicraft because they sell mostly to middlemen who in turn sell to tourists in big cities like Douala and Yaoundé, making exorbitant profits in the process. It is to help improve the earning potentials and livelihood of some of them that the Presbyterian Church in Cameroon stepped in and created the handicraft production centers that we now find all over the country and introduced the notion of fair trade whereby craftsmen benefit directly from their work and could have acceptable standards of living as a result. Francis Ngwa Niba visited the handicraft showroom in Bamenda that has over 2,500 artifacts and then a ceramic production center in Bamisimdop. Mrs. Chotu Regina, manager of Presscraft Bamenda, starts by taking Francine Guaniba on a tour of the showroom.
Here we have a set of dining table. The chairs are made of wood. The table itself is wood. And then we have the bowls that are set on the table. They are made of clay. And we have the straw table mats on which the bowls are set. All of these are locally local material that is gotten around here.
And this, how do you call this one?
Denge. This, it needs a little bit of technique. It's just like the guitar. This is a traditional guitar. So it needs your fingers need to be very flexible.
Yours aren't.
We have here a wooden carved traditional drum.
Okay, I've just seen one of your price tags and it's written there, a fair trade enterprise. What exactly does this mean?
Fair trade is a type of trade that gives preference to the producer, to the craftsman. Yes, when we sell most of the gains or what it comes, the margins, they go to the craftsman. A fair price is paid for their goods. They are provided a good working environment. We have three production centers and we also work with some producers groups. So they produce the articles and then we take them, we sell for them, we market for them.
And so from here I'll be moving to one of the production centers which is in Babising. It's quite by drive, it's about 45 minutes from this marketing center. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
After a taxi ride from Bamenda, I'm now taking a bike ride to the Presscraft Center where I'll be talking to some of the producers.
So you are highly welcome to Pressport. Pressport was created in 1984 by the Presbyterian Church in Cameroon. So the Pressport was created here in Bamisin because we have so many resources. We have a lot of clay. We use the clay for production. I have about 20 workers, the laborers and the temporary workers. I will hand you over to the head of section of ceramic, who is called Mr. Eric Kembe.
Yes, Mr. Eric, you take me around and show me exactly how this place functions.
Okay. Yeah. So here in Pressport, here we deal with clay. We have two kinds of clay. We have the black clay and we have the gray clay. And you know, when we extract the clay, when the clay is wet, the clay is elastic. So we have to dry the clay here so the clay is inelastic. So
where do you extract the clay from?
The stream is down there, just down there. So when then we store the clay to get dry, because we know when the clay is not dry, you cannot scratch the clay. So here, when we don't bring the clay, now we store the clay separately, the black one, the gray one. And when the clay is dry, now we then take the clay over there where we do the purification. Now we are going to where we purify the clay. When we bring the clay here, now we crush the clay into small particles. You know, if you just take the clay like this and put the clay into water, it will not dissolve. And we know it will not dissolve fast. So we crush the clay into small particles like this so that the clay will dissolve fast. When we bring the clay here, now we put the clay into this drum and we put water. So the clay will stay here for 24 hours, so to dissolve. When we then bring the clay now on the dryers. So this is called the dryers, and the dryer is being made out of plaster powder. So this plaster powder we use in hospital. So the dryers help now to absorb the water that is in the clay. The clay will stay on the dryer for 24 hours. We then take the clay into the storage room where we store the clay. We weigh the clay into 10 kilograms. So when we weigh the clay, we tie the clay with plastic paper so that the clay should not get dry. So that's how we preserve the clay. So, and then after that, the porters will then come now and take the clay and produce whatever the customer demand to produce. Because here in Pressport, most of our product, we produce them on demand.
Eric Kembe, there of the Bamisin Press Craft Production Center, talking to Francis Nguaniba. We produce the craft and we should consume it. Just visit any Press Craft Center and enjoy yourself. After frantic calls by members of the public for their mayors to be paid salaries, President Paul Biya has finally decided to place government delegates of city councils, mayors and their deputies on stipulated salaries, allowances and indemnities. Christopher Fogwe, however, believes that the president's decision, though overdue, is welcome and hopes that it will mitigate some of the corrupt practices, malpractices, so to say, of some municipal authorities who used the argument of no salaries as an excuse for swindling public funds.
At long last, President Paul Biya has found it expedient to place government delegates, mayors, deputy mayors, grand councillors, and some other local council officials on salaries and allowances. It ought to have been abundantly clear right from the outset that in Cameroon, mandating people to operate on the principle that a goat eats where it is tied is more often than not a recipe for graft, pilfering, corruption, greed, discrimination, favoritism, rancor, and consequently poor performance. One needs only recall that a good number of mayors were imprisoned for messing around illegally with revenue stamps worth millions. There is no doubt that other culprits from the municipal sector, culprits for various forms of malpractice, are still out there, scot-free, and continuing to grab kickbacks from unworthy contractors who consider it only normal to grease the palms of officials claiming to have no salaries. It is to be hoped that the decision to pay them salaries and allowances will to some degree mitigate their propensities to reap where they did not sow. But then, was the president's decision to introduce salaries for municipal officials a spur of the moment reaction to the calls from the public to pay their municipal representatives salaries, or was it a step in a well thought out master plan? One only wonders what criteria could have been used for the categorization of councils and for determining how much the mayors are to be paid. What importance, for example, was placed on the significance of how much is to be paid to government appointees such as the government delegates of city councils and mayors who were elected by the people to take charge of their local affairs? Whatever considerations went into the decision and whatever its long-term ramifications, it can definitely be predicted that future municipal election campaigns will be marked by far more hectic tussles for the positions of mayor and deputy mayor. Those of them who want to become career mayors will be expected to show ample proof of competence, accountability, and integrity in order to be deserving of the salaries and juicy allowances awaiting them in the new presidential dispensation? Or will it be just politics as usual?
In any case, Daddy Chris Aratadai Naimop, so local officials who perpetrate in embezzling public funds should rather beware. While most Bamenda city dwellers were hoping that city council authorities would succumb to persistent cries and calls for the rehabilitation of roads within the municipality, the city council authorities opted to give Bamenda a facelift from an unexpected, though not a negligible, angle. They are destroying and bringing down all makeshift roadside shops. According to Lem Sandra from Mujang, even though this may be detrimental to the affected business operators, it would also give the city the facelift it deserves.
There is a possibility that a good number of Bamenda city dwellers are at the verge of going jobless as a result of the renovations councils are implementing in the town. Business persons who made and created their own shops at the sites of the roads by building small tents in which they could sell their commodities and other businesses are finding it really hard to accept these renovations because it will consequently render them jobless. Councils had made this venture long before now, but the attempt looked futile as city dwellers did not obey the instructions of not selling by the roadside. Though it is good because it will help reduce the congestion and traffic situations in the town, the question is, where will these displaced persons relocate to? That is the difficulty faced by the councils and even the population. Had it been there were sheds and shops allocated for this, then it would have solved the problem. Even when the sheds are available, means of affording and paying rents are so high given that it is council's property. This explains why many business persons resort to selling along the streets. It could be quite a frustrating situation because this move will render many jobless and there will be a possibility of them changing towns and probably going to the villages because they can't meet up with the cost of the town since they have nothing doing. Others, out of frustration, will get into criminal activities, especially stealing. Though this venture by the council is good in an effect to beautify our town, it is important that they also make available alternatively spots for these displaced persons so that their lives remain quite comfortable and fulfilling in our town.
Lem Sandra Fomujang there in that report. Atanga International's open our mailbox and shall be reading the letters after this transition. In letter number one, Amabo Johnson of Up Station has something to say about the firefighting brigade Sapeur Pompier.
Dear News Extra, accept warm greetings. My preoccupation is about how rapid is the firefighting brigade. It will come as a surprise to know that the number we are given to call during a fire outbreak is not going through. I am a living testimony to this when part of our house at Up Station was consumed by fire because the number did not go through. Please, those concerned should kindly do something and fast.
At times, the network may not be good. Con Betran, writing from Bambili, has the next letter and he is reacting to government decision to pay the mayors.
Hello, Foundation Radio. Thanks for the great job you are doing. I wish to thank the head of state for allocating salaries for mayors. Mayors used to complain about insufficient allowances, in turn, extort from the council's coffers. I hope with the coming of their salaries, they will no longer complain and use the money meant for developmental projects to fulfill their purposes.
It is all our hope. And Lum Cynthia of Nanga Street, in the third letter, that happens to be the last, has this quarrel with motorists plying the mile 90 stretch of the road here in Mamenda.
Dear News Extra, my problem today is the way cars and bikes use the mile 90 stretch of road. That portion of road is always busy with students and pupils going or coming back from school. These road users overspeed on that stretch of road, which makes it no longer safe for our children. I wish the council could erect some speed brakes on that portion of the road so that the overspeeding could be reduced.
Well, we want to call on the motorists to be more careful. Keep your letters coming on email radio.foundation@yahoo.com, radio.foundation@yahoo.com. You can either also drop it here at Foundation Radio. We are situated at My 6 Ngongwan Mankon in Bamenda. Or you can call us 670-238045, 670-238045, or 698-526816, 698-526816. And Foundation Radio, because we are the voice of the voiceless, shall always be at your service.
There are people who can walk away from you, and hear me when I tell you this. When people can walk away from you, let them walk. I don't want you to try to walk another person into staying with you, loving you, calling you, caring about you, coming to see you, staying attached to you. I mean, hang up the phone. When people can walk away from you, let them walk. Your destiny is never tied to anybody that left. The Bible said that they came out from us, that it might be made manifest that they were not for us. For had they been of us, no doubt they would have continued with us. People leave because they are not joined to you. And if they are not joined to you, you can't make them stay. Let them go. And it doesn't mean that they are a bad person. It just means that their part in the story is over. And you've got to know when people's part in your story is over so that you don't keep trying to raise the dead. You've got to know when it's dead. You've got to know when it's over. Let me tell you something. I've got the gift of goodbye. It's the 10th spiritual gift. I believe in goodbye. It's not that I'm hateful. It's that I'm faithful. And I know whatever God means for me to have, He'll give it to me. And if it takes too much sweat, I don't need it. Stop begging people to stay. Let them go. If you're holding on to something that doesn't belong to you and was never intended for your life, then you need to let it go. If you're holding on to past hurts and pains, let it go. If someone can't treat you right, love you back, and see your worth, let it go. If someone has angered you, let it go. If you're holding on to some thoughts of evil and revenge, let it go. If you're involved in a wrong relationship or addiction, let it go. If you're holding on to a job that no longer meets your needs or talents, let it go. If you have a bad attitude, let it go. If you keep judging others to make yourself feel better, let it go. If you're stuck in the past and God is trying to take you to a new level in Him, let it go. If you're struggling with the healing of a broken relationship, let it go. If you keep trying to help people who won't even try to help themselves, let it go. If you're feeling depressed and stressed, let it go. If there is a particular situation that you are so used to handling yourself and God is saying, take your hands off it, then you need to let it go. Let the past be the past. Forget the former things. God is doing a new thing for you. Let it go. Get right, get left. Think about it and then let it go. The battle is the Lord's. Next, stop and think and appreciate God's power in your life for doing what you know is pleasing to Him. Yes, I love my God. He is my fountain of life and my Savior. He keeps me going day and night. Without Him, I am no one. But with Him, I can do everything. Christ is my strength. This is a simple test. If you love God and you are not ashamed of all the great things that He has done for you, send this to everyone you know. God loves you and watches over you every day.
This is Foundation Radio, FM 100 Bamenda, Northwest Region of Cameroon. The program is News Extra. I am Mokun Johnny Nelson at the anchor. Our guest on this edition of News Extra is His Royal Highness Dr. Colonel Hans Anago III, Fon of Ngwo Njikwa Subdivision, Momo Division in this Northwest Region of Cameroon. With such distinctive titles, I was confused on how to address him when I started this interview.
His Royal Highness Dr. Colonel Hans Anago III, Fon of Ngwo, with which of the appellations are you more comfortable with?
I'm comfortable with Colonel.
Okay, so we are going to retain Colonel Anago for this interview. Now, I would like you to present yourself, Colonel. You were, from my investigation, a classmate of a famous Nigerian leader and general, President Murtala Mohammed, and you later served in the Nigerian army. I want you to trace your background for our listeners.
Yes, I am His Royal Highness Dr. Colonel Hans Anago Fon of Ngwo. I joined the Nigerian army, you call it, on 16th September 1958. And we did basic training in Ghana before going to Britain. And Murtala were classmates in Ghana, Accra, Ghana, in the basic military training.
Now, how came that you served in the Nigerian army? Was it because at that time the then Southern West Cameroon was governed as part of Nigeria?
I was born in Ngwo, Bamenda Division, Southern Cameroon, Nigeria. So I was born in a Nigerian. And 1958, we were still part and parcel of Nigeria. Okay, that's why I joined the Nigerian army. There was no any other army around me except the Nigerian army.
And why served in Nigeria? Can you maybe tell us some of the memorable moments of your career?
Well, after my training, I was sent from England to Ibadan. And from Ibadan, we went to Katanga, the United Nations. There was independence in June, and then there was chaos. So United Nations sent us, Nigeria, which just got independence, not even up to a month, to send troops to Congo. So I was part of the 4th Battalion contingent, which went to Nigeria. And that's where, from there, I worked with 4th Battalion, went up to sent to Kaduna to be an instructor, where Abacha then were my students. And from there, I went back again to Congo. I came back and I was sent again to be special advisor to Mobutu. Just for 10 days, we came back and I served Nigerian Army until the first coup. I was the one commanding Lagos. The second coup, I was in Ibadan. I disarmed the coup plotters. Worked with Gawan for 2 months as head of state. When he was head of state, two of us were eating together. And then I told him I want to go back to Cameroon. He asked me, what do you want? What are your needs? You have suffered with me. Do you want money or you want promotion? He wanted even to send me to Britain as military attaché, so that after there will be peace, I will come back. I said, no, I want to, because he knew my father. When my father was sick, he came and stayed with us in Ibadan for 4 months. So Gawan knew him. I said, no, that man is almost dying now. Let me go and sit by his side, then I will come back.
And so finally, he led you to come to Cameroon.
I was back end of 66, but I started work. You see, what happened was that he gave me 3 months leave, paid me six months, pocket money again, 6 months. That's what I finished my house up station with the money from General Gawan. And then he sent a message after 3 months that I was with General Kwetu, who was out late, that we should come back. That the message went straight to Yaounde, but it was a plane that was sent to Bali to pick us. So I said, I'm not going by plane, I had my car. We drove through Douala to Yaounde. When we reached Yaounde, they sent us straight to the tailor. Put sold army uniform and made us captains. We were majors, so made us captains. I said, we're young. So we took it.
And what was your first assignment in the Cameroonian Army?
The first assignment was, I was transferred to Nkongsamba. Kwetu was transferred to Bafoussam. But from Nkongsamba, I was detached in Banga to understudy, to see how the Cameroon Army works in the French style. So I was there with the late Epanya, Colonel Epanya. He was the captain. I was the captain. So I had an apartment with him, and I was there for 3 months. After 3 months, the Biafra war started, and I was sent to Boya with Colonel Kweti as my assistant to look after the frontier from Kambe right down to Ndian. So we were doing all that up and down, up and down.
And that you successfully did?
Yes. I was replaced by this Colonel Etonde, who is famous now. And then I was replaced and sent to France for 9 months, more French.
Now, you said you work in Nkongsamba. You were part of the squad that cracked on the Makiza that operated around the Mungo area during that period.
Look, about Makiza, start from Banga. For the 3 months that I was learning how to work with the French system in the army, we were always, every week, we were in the bush with the Colonel Epanya fighting Makiza. Eventually, when I came back from France, I was transferred to Bangante on my own now, independently commanding a company. I was in Bangante for 10 months. And every month I spent at least 20 days sleeping in the bush. I cleaned the whole Bamdike forest with Makiza. And the good thing about Makiza is, Makiza, even with Boko Haram, Makiza is not an angel. It's not a devil. It's a human being like us.
Because the story,
and he works with people. So you have to befriend the people to succeed. And that's what I did in Bangante. Since I'm a graphic man, I went to places and understand them because I can speak Bali. You cannot speak Bangante and hide from me. So I knew how to get them. And I left Bangante without killing people. So many people reported to my office with their weapons, to the gendarmes with their weapons, to the traditional rulers with their weapons, and that whenever they came, I look at their ages and gave them identity cards, not selling to BMM. For example, you catch a boy coming from school and you make him Makiza, what is his crime? So those young people, I send them back to their parents with national identity cards, and then I had so many reporting.
Is it true that the Makizas were mysterious? Because some mystery is always been attached to their activity. Is it true?
They use no black magic. I told you in Congo, 20th January 1961, they came around and said that they have black magic, will kill all of them. So there's no question of black magic when a bullet is concerned.
You came to Cameroon, and it means that you were in the country during the APC coup d'etat in 1984. What role exactly did you play to save this country and its personalities from the rebels, if I should say so?
That is a good book. The book I'm writing is called A Loyal Soldier Without a Fatherland. That is in Nigeria. I did things, I was not promoted. They were promoting by tribes. I had no tribe. I came to Cameroon. Since I'm an Anglo from Bamenda, what I did on the 6th of April 1984, in other countries, they should give me general, because general has ranks. There's brigadier general, there's major general, there's lieutenant general, there's a general. They should have given me general, right to the top, because I single-handedly handled this issue of 6th April.
Explain it to our listeners, how it happened.
6th April 84, I was staying in a guest house. I just came from America. My family was still in the U.S. Guest house, I was chief of intelligence. Then early in the morning, I heard gunshots. I said, this is what I said will happen in this country. The presidential guard should be the people shooting those guns. I saw soldiers passing. I said, c'est qui? Moi, je ne connais pas. Finally, one of them told me that it's presidential guard. I said, by 12 o'clock, we're beating them. That's what I said. Still in my pajamas. Then I went to my room, put on my uniform, put a cap. I didn't have a correct fighting uniform. I went straight away and occupied the office of the commander of the army. Then I started giving orders. I am the only person who's seen coup d'etat before that coup d'etat.
Because you served in Nigeria.
I see two Nigeria. The first coup in the time in Nigeria, I was commanding Lagos. I drove the coup plotters, commanding Lagos. The second coup was my battalion in Ibadan. I was the one who disarmed the coup plotters. So I knew about coups, which we teach. We teach to these officers how to make a coup d'etat, how to fight a coup d'etat. We teach. You see? So I was able to fight. And one greatest thing we did was, or the worst thing I saw was, in the commander's armory is where they store guns and ammunition, there were no corresponding bullets for the rifles that they were keeping. And it's the northerners who had planned that. So that if I attack you, you take a gun, you don't have a bullet to put inside. It's a wrong bullet, and the gun of that bullet is somewhere else.
Sure.
So I detailed one of my toughest officers, Obasa Boy, Colonel Mang Sylvester. He has been my assistant many times. He went to the police and met the present delegate, caught a load of weapons and ammunition. That's what saved me. Brought it to my headquarters. When they were bringing it to my headquarters, the rebels attacked them at the post office. They abandoned those two vehicles, the drivers. I sent a Bamenda boy who had come from Douala, because I sent a message for Douala people to come and help me. They already come from Douala. And I sent a Betty boy first. He escaped. He disappeared. I sent this Bamenda boy to go and get me those weapons. He brought his weapons into my headquarters. And it's from there that I was able to send detachment to save my own Minister of Defense, Anje Chungi.
Okay.
Brought him to my headquarters in my civilian vehicle. Before he died, he told his people, say, then Anglo came and sauve. They should always help me in my difficulties. From that instant, when the generals came, most of them in civilian clothes, I handed over to them. I'd gone to a stage, I handed over to them. They now sent me to Cartier General to mobilize soldiers to do this, to do that. And I took the commander of the Cartier General, General Asso, I took him, he was a colonel, I took him to his people and told him, I don't know these people. When there's a mission, you detail the people for me. I stayed there, and then Samobo went to the post, to the radio station, to announce that we have taken over. But before then, I had told my minister that by 12 o'clock, we'll be through. And before 12 o'clock, we were through.
Interesting. Now, you were Cameroon's military attaché in the United States of America for 10 years?
Yes.
That was a long time.
Yes.
Why did you stay that long in the U.S.?
They wanted me to be hidden so that I should not cause trouble. I don't know which trouble they meant. They just fabricated things that I was very popular, and as coup d'etats were all over in Africa, they said a coup d'etat may be me. Because I was very popular with the soldiers because I did my work right. I never planned at any time in my life to destabilize my country. Never. So I stayed there until after the 10 years, I had to beg to come back. I begged. Came here, I said, I'm a fun, I begged. I was made fun when I was in the U.S. I beg. 10 years, they told me 5 years. Then I beg. They didn't even send me a ticket. I had to get a ticket and came home. And when I came home, they had transferred. I just moved to my office.
Now, Colonel, with all this military knowledge, are you a consultant with the Cameroon Military Academy Yaoundé? You should be a consultant, I think.
They fear me because when I'm a consultant, I'll tell them, don't steal money. Don't steal. They don't like to hear somebody like that. Bamuna once told me that if you always go to somebody's house, every time you go, you tell me your shirt is dirty. You come again and say your shirt is dirty. Would the man like to see you in his house? He don't like to see you in the house. Because you know that if I go there, I will criticize one or two things. And they don't like that. So a lot of us in Cameroon here would like to work in obscurity, in pure darkness, so that we should steal. God shall sort us out one by one.
Now that the country is threatened by cross-border insecurity, especially in its northern and eastern borders, though retired, has government consulted you for any intelligence savoir-faire?
Those are highly confidential things, and I have a lot of secrets about Nigeria because I was positively vetted. I was chief of intelligence, military intelligence in Cameroon. We don't speak things like that. So whatever our country is planning to do to bring this situation under control, we leave it to Almighty God.
Okay, His Royal Highness Dr. Colonel Hans Anago III Fonongo, one last advice to your junior colleagues now serving in the Cameroon military.
The advice I'll give to my military is that, is what I used to tell them, you are serving God. Open your knowledge to God. You are serving God first. Second, you are serving your nation. A nation you vow to defend to the last drop of your blood. Third, you are serving for your end of month pay. If you don't work well, they will not promote you. They will not pay you. They will not send you for further training. You serve yourself last. And this country will have a beautiful army, an excellent army, and will be sure of our defense.
Colonel, thank you very much for taking time to come to Foundation Radio. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. It's been a very good exposure for the few things I know for the other people to know. I'm always available. I'm always ready. I'm called from time to time to talk to students, to talk to people about so many issues. And I thank God that God sent me to some of the best schools in this world. And that knowledge, I have used it. I still have it. I'm still ready to dish it out. Thank you.
You are indeed a real library. It is time for press review. How did colleagues of the print media angle news happenings during the week at Tanga Athanasios has this review.
Chronicle newspaper, in its Monday's edition, captions on page 2, ENS graduates may no longer be directly recruited by the government. The paper reports that, in reaction to the above promo, the Minister of Higher Education, Professor Jacques Famingo, in an exclusive interview with the National Radio and Television, CRTV, he did not openly address the issue squarely. According to the paper, Famindongo averred that, unlike in the past, there will subsequently be a recruitment competitive examination to ascertain the recruitment of medical doctors within the public service. Paul Bia to appoint new SDOs and DOs this week. Chronicle newspaper reports that all is set for a series of presidential decrees to be signed with the return back home of President Paul Bia last week. Amongst the numerous decrees will be that of senior divisional officers and divisional officers. The paper equally talked about a decree and modalities concerning the salary of mayors and their deputies, which actually came to pass this week. Turning to the Post newspaper, we find this story: Southwest Governor rates markets and motor parks. The paper says Southwest Governor Bernard Okala Bilai, in a surprise visit to Kumba on September 12th, stormed markets, motor parks, and other public places to strengthen the implementation of security measures in the national fight against the activities of the dreaded Boko Haram sect. The Post newspaper reports how mafia frustrates Frank CFA 30 billion for Cameco aircraft poaches. The paper says the Cameroon Airlines Corporation, Cameco, last week came under media scrutiny when passengers who had bought tickets to fly to France were left stranded in Yaoundé and Douala for lack of a plane. It was the same story for hundreds of Muslim faithfuls who were supposed to be flown by Cameco to Mecca for pilgrimage. The passengers, who were full of indignation, stormed the Yaoundé branch office of Cameco in protest. The paper says the situation was brought under control when two Airbus planes, 330, hired by the management of Cameco, came to their aid. On to the Guardian Post, we read this story: how President Paul Bia has appointed new officials to some of the state aid universities as well as the Ministry of Higher Education. The paper noted that Anglophone rectors were spared in the shake-up. The pioneer rector of the University of Marwa, Edward Open Aku, was maintained. So too was the vice chancellor of the University of Bamenda, Tafa Edukat Edward Oki. The paper says, as concerned the University of Boya, noted for sporadic strike actions, its vice chancellor, Nalova Lyonga, was given another chance. Kumbu Diocese rallies masses against human trafficking. The Guardian Post reports that the Justice and Peace Commission of the Kumbu Diocese has rallied Christians and non-Christians from across Bui and Donga Mountain Divisions for a unity march against trafficking in persons. The protesters were calling on the government to make the 2011 law on the fight against human traffickers in Cameroon a reality. That's all we had time for this week. On to next week for what the papers would have said.
The rendezvous is taken at Tanga International. The recent apparently peaceful elections into the presidency of the Fecafoot Regional Bureaus projects a possible end to the perennial Fecafoot saga. In the following write-up, Lanza Vela highlights some of the basics that sanction the tensed Fecafoot elections in the Northwest region.
Things are apparently moving on well at the Cameroon Football Federation, Fecafoot, following the smooth conduct of elections into the regional bureaus of the structure. Calm and serenity preceded and followed the elections in all the regions, except for the Northwest region, where the build-up to the elections and the elections proper were gripped by tension, stemming principally from the disqualification of the list of some contenders. John Began in this list was disqualified for a number of reasons. One of the 8 members of his list pulled out at the last minute, leaving Jebinde with an incomplete list. Also, out of the 5 divisional leagues concerned, that is Bui, Donga Mantung divisions, only Donga Mantung was represented in the list by one delegate. And going by the electoral rules, the list must have a minimum of 3 delegates representing various divisional leagues that participated in the electoral process. Robert Atta's list was also disqualified since it was not complete. And to pour out their frustrations on this decision of the Fecafoot Electoral Commission, some of the 31 delegates to the Regional Assembly decided to abstain from the electoral process, putting the elections a day behind schedule. good a thing. Nothing could inhibit the elections totally on day two, going by the presidential dictate that all elections must be conducted whether a quorum was attained or not. But after all the melodrama, Christopher Kaba, who ran unopposed, grabbed 17 of the 31 votes available to be the man to run things at the Regional Bureau of Fekafoot. With a 10-man list of the Fekafoot regional presidents now known and confirmed, all attention now is on September 28, when the president of Fekafoot will be elected. And that the regional elections registered very little hitches, whispers the promise that the September 28 polls could register a historic peaceful Fekafoot elections. Of course, this ought to be the case, for any elections failure will render Cameroon more susceptible to the looming FIFA ban.
Lanza Vela, you started the program with a review of the week, and with your sports write-up, we put a cap on this edition of News Extra. Thank you very much, and to the entire crew and all of you dear listeners. Same time next week, and since it will be the same radio, it shall be the same frequency, FM 100, but this time for a brand new edition of News Extra. The richest man is not he who has the most, but he who needs the least. I am yours, Mokun Johnny Nelson. Till next week, accept my blessed regards.